This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Gazelle Full Circle Resale. Now accepting like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, accessories, and curios. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-284-4192.
Good morning. Are we on?
Yes, good morning. My name is Ed Goldberg. I'm here with my friends and colleagues.
John Taylor.
And?
DK Holm.
And we have a whole bunch of movies, and 5 minutes is already gone from our show, so we really need to get rolling. Do we have some quick announcements, Doug?
Yes, I want to alert people to the fact that the Laurel Race is continuing with its great 70s cinema series, and they've got Rollerball up now, the earlier bad one as opposed to the recent bad one. And, Ed, you're a big fan of The Bellboy, which is at the Northwest Film Center on July 27th, aren't you?
Jerry Lewis's The Bellboy. Actually, Sean Levy tells me this is the best of Jerry Lewis's films, and I guess he's the expert.
And he's right. The Bellboy's wonderful.
It's a wonderful movie,
yes.
Actually, yeah. Okay, that's the Northwest Film Center, 221-1156. Let's start with Monster House. Oh, a DVD giveaway. Don't call yet. Don't call yet. I'll tell you when to call. But it's an early frost. What is that all about?
That is the TV movie that was the first television program to mention the subject or deal intelligently with the subject of AIDS. It stars Aidan Quinn, Ben Gazzara, and Gina Rowlands.
Okay, he looks about 10 years old there. Okay, Monster House. You want to do the write-up on this, Dawn?
Sure. I think most of us had the experience when we were kids that you have that one really creepy, scary old man in your neighborhood who's yelling at you all the time to stay off the lawn, and you're afraid to, like, you know, go into his yard because he'll steal your toys, and you're completely convinced he'll kill you. And that Monster House kind of takes off from that point where a young boy in his neighborhood, he ends up tangling with the creepy old man, Mr. Nevercracker, and through a certain set of circumstances believes he's actually killed him, and that the house is now has the spirit of Mr. Nevercracker in it and is dangerous, and they have to fight the house. So it's three kids fighting a scary monster house, hence the name. And it's the most recent animated film from producers Steven Spielberg and Robert Zemeckis, who brought us the bafflingly popular, creepy, creepy, creepy movie, The Polar Express. And this is not creepy. This is actually, I thought, pretty darn good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's surprisingly smart, surprisingly dark for a movie aimed at kids. It's the kind of dark that I think children really, really enjoy. And as an adult, I have to say, I enjoyed this movie just on its own merits as a grown-up. So I think it's something that that kids and adults ought to give it a try. It's a very good film. I give it a B.
Actually, I like it even more than you did. I thought this was the best. First of all, it's the scariest movie of the year. We have one other horror film here. It doesn't even come close to being as scary as this. It's also a really good-looking film. Mm-hmm. The animation, the computer animation, is getting to the point now where certain things are so real-looking that it's getting a little funny. Excellent voice work from everybody. This kid, Michael Musso, Spencer Locke, who plays the little girl, Sam Lerner. These three kids are terrific. Maggie Gyllenhaal and Steve Buscemi contribute voices. And Catherine, what's her name?
O'Hara.
Kathleen Turner. At the very end.
But Catherine O'Hara is in it as well. Fred Willard, they play the parents, very briefly.
There's adult humor in this thing that the kids aren't going to get, but I found very, very funny. There's something in this for everyone. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. I gave it an A-.
What's interesting about this, too, really quickly, is that the animation, while very realistic in some respects, is still left fairly cartoony.
Yes.
And this is a film that if it had been shot in live action, which it could have been with CGI being what it is now, it would have been very, very scary. But because the character design and the sets and everything are left fairly cartoony, it's not going to be as scary for kids, I don't think. So it actually walks that line really, really well.
Except that the expressions on the kids' faces are so human that it's really amazing. That's Monster House. Not a bad movie. Okay. Well, here we go in the other direction. At least I think so. Lady in the Water. This is directed by M. Night Shyamalan. It stars Paul Giamatti, wonderful Paul Giamatti, Bryce Dallas Howard, who just stands around looking pretty. Shyamalan is in it, an actor of no particular distinction. and a director, I think, of no particular distinction. And there's a wonderful effort from Giamatti in this. He plays a schlumpy guy with a seedy apartment complex, and suddenly a water nymph rises up out of the swimming pool and throws everything into a it sets the plot in motion. I don't know. This is a fairy tale that developed from a bedtime story that Shyamalan told his kids, and it has that kind of made up, not making much sense thing. And every time you hear the story retold, more details added, and it's just to help move the plot along, which otherwise would lay there like a dead fish itself. I really, really did not like this movie, and although it at the beginning it almost had me, despite there's a little cartoon animation at the very beginning, which almost made me walk out of the theater. I just really didn't like this film. I'm sorry. I think M. Night Shyamalan did The Sixth Sense, and everything else he's done is crap. There isn't anything else I've liked, and this is so sentimental and silly that this man can't tell a simple story. I give the movie a D+, and I think people should stay away. Dawn?
I liked it. Oh. I did. I like it. I'm a fan of Shyamalan. Despite hating The Village, I admit that I loathed
and
The Village.
Unbreakable?
I loved Unbreakable.
You loved it.
Okay. I loved it. I like his storytelling. I just do. And in this film, it's certainly problematic. It certainly does have his ego splashed all over it. The story itself, the names of the characters, the water nymph is a narf, and the evil kind of wolfy monster chasing her is a scrunt. They're stupid names. But it's a film about storytelling. It's a film that it's very meta. It's a movie about people telling each other stories, which makes it a little bit talky. But I don't know. I enjoyed the story. I liked watching all of the events played out, and I loved Paul Giamatti in this film.
He's very good.
His performance in this movie is just, he commits himself to this 100%, and he's so very, very good. I wouldn't say that it's the best of Shyamalan's films, and you don't like him at all, so obviously you agree. But it doesn't stand with The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, certainly. But I really enjoyed it, but I can see why people would dislike it. It's certainly not going to be a film that's for everybody. I give it a B. It's certainly not one of the best films I've seen so far this year, but it's not a terrible movie to me. I don't think it is.
Okay, so that's,
I disagree, Mr. Goldberg. You're wrong.
That's Lady in the Toilet. I'm sorry, Lady in the Water. I apologize. Well, okay, let's go from the ridiculous to the somewhat even more ridiculous. My super ex-girlfriend, Doug, tell us about
this is the new Ivan Reitman comedy, and it is, I guess the best way to describe it would be a cross between the TV shows The Office and Smallville, in that it has there's a little office, a stagnant office romance, or two people like each other, but they won't admit it, and the female half has a boyfriend out there who's a creep. And the male half, played by the good Wilson, Luke Wilson, right?
I
turned
it
on for
the Wilsons.
Okay,
I love all the Wilsons.
He's a little bit of a schlub, and he's encouraged by his best friend or his work friend. And this is the kind of comedy where that sort of the teen comedy principle applies, where the main character has a friend who is the worst possible friend ever, who always gives terrible advice and is unsupportive. Anyway, this guy's played by Rainn Wilson, who's in the TV show The Office. Anyway, encourages him to try to pick up a girl on the subway. This happens to be Uma Thurman. And they start dating, but what nobody realizes is she is G-Girl, the famous super heroine who is rescuing various people around Manhattan. She's also got a bit of a temper, and she's a little bit neurotic. And so when Luke Wilson breaks up with her, she exacts revenge in such ways as going to the throwing a shark through his apartment window into his living room. The shark wasn't very happy. Anyway, it's got a certain premise, and it follows the premise through fairly well. It's not as funny as The 40-Year-Old Virgin, but it's of that same kind of school, only a little softer, a little gentler maybe. And it's well acted all around by everybody. I won't go into too much detail because we don't have time, and also should leave the listeners with some surprises when they see the movie, but there are some very funny subsidiary characters. And I give it I laughed out loud many times. I wish it had been better. I give it a B minus.
Have you seen this?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I think I kind of agree with you. It's not a bad movie at all. It's quite pleasant. It's just that it left me curiously cold. I think that the problem is that it's a terrific premise. I love the premise. I love all the actors in it. But the bar for superhero comedies has kind of already been set by The Incredibles and by Sky High, the Disney film, which was really, really terrific, taking the premise of superheroes, you know, and their day-to-day life. And so this just, it worked. Everything kind of meshed together, but I just never found it quite as funny or as interesting as I'd hoped I would, given the premise. I'd have to give it a B minus. It's like I said, it's not a terrible film at all, but I wanted, like you, I wished it had been funnier.
Gee whiz, this is the one movie we've all given the same grade that I can think of. I thought there was a few good laughs in it. I thought Uma Thurman did a terrific job. Luke Wilson, I don't have much, you know, to truck with either of the Wilson brothers, but he was really good in this movie. He did the character with earnestness and passion. I mean, Anna Faris, who plays his real love interest, I think she's worth watching. She's done a few small things, but she has a gift for light comedy. Anyway.
And it's worth noting that Eddie Izzard is in it.
Eddie Izzard is terrific.
I love Eddie
Izzard
also, yeah. Anytime.
It's the writing that lets this down. There's a few great gags, and this the silliest sight gag of the year. I kind of wish I hadn't blown the shark thing, because that really, really made me laugh.
I blew it. It's in every trailer.
I haven't seen any trailer. Okay, you're off the hook. anyway, a few misfired jokes. The movie's really not too bad. If you go expecting, you know, not a great movie, I think you'll have a lot of fun with it. I give it a B minus also, as did everybody else. Okay, Dawn, you're the only one who saw the new Woody Allen film, Scoop. Tell us about it.
I did. I saw it last night. It's really interesting because the last decade, I've disliked a great many of Allen's films.
And, as have we all.
And yeah, and then he just seems to have kind of become renewed a little bit. He made Match Point, which people loved. It was a
good
fine
movie.
Film, nice crime drama. And here he comes back, and he sets this film in London again. And it also stars Scarlett Johansson again. And this time it's a light, kind of silly comedy. And once again, it's a terrific movie. So I'm wondering if there's this kind of quality of Allen that his best films have been made when he's been sort of working with these muse-like actresses. Like, he made 8 movies with Diane Keaton. He made 13 with Mia Farrow. Now he's made 2 with Scarlett Johansson that have been very, very good. And this one, the film begins with the boat to the afterlife, and on that boat is a hotshot journalist named Joe Strombel, played by Ian McShane, who gets a tidbit of information from another dead person on the boat about this hot story, the possible identity of the tarot card killer, a serial killer operating in London. And it's like he's one of those journalists that he has to do something with Scoop, so he jumps over the boat and heads back to life. Meanwhile, there's a young American journalism student living in London, played by Johansson, who has been brought up on stage by a third-rate hack magician, the amazing Splendini, played by Allen. And she's in his magic Chinese box, and that's when McShane appears to her and gives her the scoop. And so the rest of the film is her trying to prove or disprove that this London aristocrat, played by Hugh Jackman, is the serial killer. She falls in love with Jackman. Jackman may or may not be the serial killer. And she's helped by this, like, Catskills hack magician, played by Allen, who is at the best in this film that he has been in years. Just absolutely wonderful. Playing his age, finally. Not playing the guy who's going after the young hotsy-totsy chick. Just playing, you know, doing card tricks and doing patter. Every time you meet someone, it's like, no, you're beautiful. You're really beautiful. You're a credit to your race. And it's just delightful. It's just full of Allen's trademark wisecracks and funny, funny dialogue. The plot itself is sort of thin and kind of silly, but as it is in, like, many of his films, like Manhattan Murder Mystery and such. But I loved this movie. I laughed, and I was just delighted by it. I'd give it an A-. I'd recommend it to anybody who's been disappointed by Allen's films over the last decade. It's like he feels somehow renewed in this movie. It's fabulous.
Well, assuming he's getting a little old, I think maybe Scarlett Johansson is next on the list. Doug and I, maybe we'll try to see this. Yes, it's time to give away way, an early frost with Aidan Quinn, who looks about 10 years old on the cover. Give us a call at 503-231-8032, and the first person who calls who is a KBOO member wins it. Okay, Miami Vice. We saw this last night. Doug, you want to tell us about Miami Vice?
Yes, it's Michael Mann produced the original television series, but he didn't direct it or even create it, but he views it now as his own. He's done the latest adaptation of an old TV show, and that and it's more or less follows, it's a blend of what the old TV show was like, if you ever saw that, and a blend of what Michael Mann's been doing more recently in movies like Collateral with his high-definition images and pervasive music and this kind of somber quietude. And Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx are the Crockett and Tubbs. And they're a little harder, colder, more Michael Mann-ish than the TV characters were. If you like the show, you probably wouldn't like this movie. If you like Michael Mann, you probably will. I favored the movie a little bit more, I know, than Ed did. I wish that I'd personally seen it under different circumstances. And also, I think the sound was a little off last night.
A little muddy.
A lot of people are going to find it slow and unengaging. I found it intriguing, and I like the look and feel of Mann's films. Maybe this isn't quite the right material for the tone that he's trying to achieve, but I give it a B minus, little bit above average, but not great.
Well, I found it cliched and boring. I mean, this is just, you know, it's Traffic Chapter 2. The fact that it's Crockett and Tubbs really annoyed me because I love the TV show. This movie has no style. The TV show is all about style. It's all about, you know, hot, hip Miami. And this is about greasy drug dealers spouting gaudy patter at one another in two or three languages. Gong Li is in it. What she's doing there, I have no idea. I'm not even sure she knows what she's doing there. It's a few hot action sequences separated by really dull setups. Jamie Foxx sleepwalks through the movie. All the parts are underwritten. I don't know. If looking at the TV show and looking at this film, I won't even do that. Let's take this film on its face. On its face, this film was no fun at all, and I really didn't like it much. It was really good looking. It looked pretty, but that was about it. Give the movie a C. I can't do any better than that. Okay, now we got a bunch of movies, and we only have 8 minutes left, so let's see if we can go through these. Intercosmos. Intercosmos is a little film directed by Jim Finn, who also has a part in it. It's, what, about an hour and 10 minutes long, like that? It's a dreamlike movie. It's a fictional East German space program when there was still an East Germany. They're colonizing the moon of Jupiter, I believe. Occasionally, this film is very effective. It's often very baffling in a kind of a psychedelic way. Sometimes it's a bit dull, just like, you know, space travel is. And it's done in a documentary style, which I found intriguing because the documentary style works with the material. Strongest point is the imaginative concept and the fact that they're doing this well with no budget. The budget was about $17. The other thing that was real interesting in the film was the music, which I liked a lot. I gave the movie a C+. I can't do much better than that, but I just wish there were a little more to it, Doug.
I give it a C+, too. I wish it had been funnier. It's a kind of a clever premise, but it quite simply the execution is too spotty.
Okay. Three Times. You want to tell us about Three Times?
Yes, it's the new movie by Hu Hsiao-hsien, if I'm saying his name correctly, the Taiwanese director. And what he's done is has a cast of two, a man and a woman actor, and he's come up with three stories, one set in 1966, which is the first one, a second story set in
1911,
thank you, I guess you've all seen the movie, two, and then the final one set in now, and the middle story is essentially a silent movie. There's music, and it's in color, but you don't hear anybody talk. And The third story is the most modern, interesting. Hu Hsiao-hsien is heavily influenced by the Japanese director Ozu. And so I think viewers watching this, should be warned that it is deliberately paced. And
slow.
He approaches things from indirectly. And some people might find that frustrating. I found it fascinating. Just on a film buff's note, the three films seem to follow Hu Hsiao-hsien's career. The first one is seemingly autobiographical. It's very much like the movies he made in the early part of his career. The second one harks back to early Japanese cinema, and then the third story, Chinese cinema, and the third story is more like what he does these days. It's a little colder and a little more cynical. I really liked it quite a bit, but I don't think it's for everybody. I give it a B plus and recommend it, but you know, with the warning that it's slowly paced.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I was mesmerized by this film. I just found it absolutely beautiful. But it is, you know, where one person finds something languid, someone else may find it slow and obtuse. And the first story, you kind of missed what they were actually about. The first is about a young soldier who is in love with a girl who works in a pool hall, who keeps moving from different pool halls, and they try to maintain communication. The second one is about a geisha, and the third one is a triangle between a bisexual singer and a man and a woman, and they communicate a lot with email and text messaging, cell phone and stuff. And it's a movie about communication. It's about love. It's about the way the different things that restrict us depend on the times in which we live. And I think that by doing three different time periods, it shows in their own ways, each of these couples is laboring under some certain restrictions on their relationship, which are because of the times they live in. And I loved this movie. Like you, I would give it a B plus. I'd almost give it an A, except like you said, a lot of people are going to find it very slow and possibly a little bit frustrating because he's not the most linear of storytellers. But cinematically, this is a beautiful, beautiful film.
Yeah, that's why I'm giving it a B, because I thought the stories were very, very slight to the point of being thin. I really didn't know what he was driving at. I liked the silent one most of all because it was, even though it's a kind of a trick, it's a great trick, and he brings off the trick quite well. Plus, the music is classic Chinese music, and it played on a pipo and sung in that wonderful high-pitched piping style of the time. Almost not quite a Peking opera style, but sort of like that. I just kept thinking, am I missing something here? Is something supposed to be happening that I'm not seeing? Give the movie a B, but it's basically on its looks and the music, and I really couldn't. This guy doesn't do much for me. Okay, that was Army of. That was three times. Let's do Army of Shadows. We only have 3 minutes left. I do Army of Shadows. Okay.
There you go.
I'm getting for
steer the ship, Goldberg.
It's directed by Jean-Pierre Melville. It's from 1969. Lino Ventura, Simone Signoret. Gripping movie, beautifully filmed story of the French underground of World War II. But I was left with a desire to know more. The script telescopes events. It takes us from one to thing. It takes us from A to X without going through B, C, and D. There's not quite enough context for the story, but that's a quibble. It's a very good movie. The performances are all brilliant. A couple of things in it are really horrifying, but that's the way it was in the French underground. We tend to think of the French as a bunch of cowards and quitters, but these people were nothing like that, and this gives us a little glimpse into the nature of their lives. I give the movie a B+. I think it's definitely worth seeing. Dawn?
Yeah, I agree. It's one of the earliest examples of neorealistic cinema. It's I'd say the same thing I did about three times. If you're really have a bugaboo about nonlinear storytelling, this will drive you crazy. But I found the way he told the story fascinating. It is very moving. I think it's a really interesting examination of the personalities of people involved in the French underground. And I'd give it a B plus. I loved it.
Doug?
I so wish we had time to discuss it in more detail. I give it an A. I will simply direct listeners next week sometime. I'll be reviewing it at the website, Quick Step Entertainment. I just want to say that I found it fascinating. I thought about it for days afterwards and explored it mentally.
I would have given it an A, but every time I give something an A, Ed mocks me.
No, so. I'll stop doing that. That's really low class. The Descent. The Descent, Doug, you quickly?
A horror film by the guy who did a small masterpiece called Dog Soldiers. He's a British fellow named Neil Marshall. This movie doesn't. The first half of it works brilliantly. The second half, when the women in the caves discover the actual monsters down there, when you see them, a little wind goes out of the balloon there. But I'd say the first half of the movie is an A and the second half is a C. It's a essentially effective horror film, but it goes a little awry towards the end.
Yeah, it's women in deep caves. Any Freudian symbolism there? I'm wondering about this. This is a bunch of women going down a cave and finding creatures that shouldn't ever see the light of day.
It's very sapphic.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's all right. I gave it a B-. I'm the only one who saw The Night Listener.
No, I saw it.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Night Listener, directed by Patrick Stettner with Robin Williams and Toni Collette. Very small movie, openly gay radio storyteller whose personal life is falling apart, gets a call from a kid allegedly dying of AIDS and tries to do something for him. The film has a kind of a surprise at the end, which you see coming halfway through the movie. Everybody is very good. I give the movie a B-.
Yeah, I liked it. If you've read Amistad Maupin's book, you'll find it's a good adaptation of the book. I'd give it a B- as well.
Okay, gee whiz. Maybe next time we'll get a full half hour. Thanks very much.
Coming right up, it's Speaking of Animals with host Lori Sonnenfeld. She'll be talking to Sharon Murphy, director of PAWS, a no-kill cat shelter in West Lynn. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller will speak with George Kimbrell, staff attorney with the International Center for Technology Assessment, about a petition they filed with the FDA regarding nanotechnology in consumer products. At 10:30, Jill Severson interviews Gila Savirsky of the Women's Coalition for Peace in Jerusalem, and Palestinian-American activist and businessman Sam Bahour about current events in Palestine. At 11, it's Democracy Now!, and at noon on Alternative Radio, Stephen Kinzer speaks on Iran and the 1953 American coup.
I'm George Takei. Hear about First Contacts on Crossing East.
Chinese ships were incredibly seaworthy.
There are so many people up and down this coast of Hawaiian descent, as I am.
So they decided to build their Filipino villages along the bayous of Louisiana.
Crossing East, the first Asian American history series on this radio station.
That's next Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.